Welcome back to another episode of Black Lawn Legal Lies, where we legally lie to you.
Yeah, that's what we be doing. We be legally lying because we ain't got no fucking attorney again this week. So, Becky, would you care to share with the listeners what happened this week as far as our missing attorney for the 9th week in a row?
So the story I got was they were unable to attend because they got their second Moderna shot.
Pfizer.
It was Pfizer?
Well, knowing her crazy ass, she probably mixed the two. She probably got the first one Moderna, second one Pfizer, and she going for the Johnson & Johnson on the third go around.
She want to make sure she's super secure, huh?
Yeah, because she infected.
Well, yes, supposedly she had side effects and rendered her unable to be a co-host.
Man, she ain't never able to be a co-host. So, ladies and gentlemen, this week, well, in case you didn't know, my name is Dan, of course, and I am one of your hosts, and you can keep up with me on Twitter and on IG at I Am Dan on Drugs. Keep up with the show on all social media platforms at Black Law Podcast, where we don't post anything.
And I'm your other co-host, Afro Becky.
Becky! So, yeah, at least this week, I got a text message, right? So, we were supposed to record on a yesterday, and I get a phone call at 9 something in the morning. Man, I'm knocked the fuck out because I've been under my truck for like 2 days in a row trying to fix some shit, right? So I was tired, knocked out. So this person, we're just going to call her Subject A for asshole, calls me at 9:44 in the morning. So I return the call at 11. I'm like, yo, the fuck you calling me for so early in the morning? Look, my business hours are from 12 p.m. until 12:02 p.m. So she was like, yeah, look, I was just letting you know I'm ready. I was ready. You know, I was ready to come record. She knows goddamn good and well I don't do shit before 12 p.m. on any day. So she was like, text me when you're ready. Okay, bet. Let me finish fixing my truck and then I'm going to hit you and you can head out. So then I get another text. Oh, look, I got to go holler at Jesus. I got to go see Jesus for a little while. So
she went to heaven.
Well, I guess. I don't know where the hell she went. Mm. She claimed she went to church. So, yeah, I got to go holler at Jesus right quick. But, you know, I'm going to come through there after I holler at Jesus. Okay, whatever. I'm still under the truck. And now I done broke my phone up and shit at this point. So I'm pissed off. But look, get another text message. Yo, I'm not going to be able to make it today because this second shot has me, it gave me narcolepsy. I can't stay awake. If you can't stay awake, how the fuck you texting me? If you could text, you could talk. If you could talk, you could pod. So, anyway, long story short, here we are again, another week without Anne. So, this week, what I wanted to do was, actually, I listened back while editing last week's podcast. And I made a remark that's kind of a running joke as far as when it comes to Becky, which is she doesn't sound the blackest. And of course, I gave an example where she called my doctor, made an appointment for me, and my doctor wrote down that I was a white woman. So it's no secret that Becky does not sound what would be considered sounding black. You get that a lot, right?
Often, yes.
Okay. So I wanted to actually explore that a little bit. One, how does it make you feel when people tell you you don't sound black or they're surprised that you are black?
I don't feel negatively about it. I could say that it makes me, I mean, honestly, it's just, I'm just kind of indifferent about it. There's nothing that I can do to change it. I don't think that I need to change it.
There is something you can do. You can be like, yo, nigga, I said get the fuck out my face.
But that's not me. That's not how I talk. I am, you know, why aren't I good enough the way that I am?
If you don't like me, that's some black. That's some black shit. Why aren't I? Why are not I? The hell kind of contractions you using over there? So, The reason I brought it up is, well, first I'm going to ask you a series of questions because I read an interesting article and I want to talk about growing up, some of your background, because I'd say that most of our listeners are familiar enough with my background, familiar enough with Ann's background, but not so familiar with yours. And we talked about last week, you did grow up in a home that your parents owned and what have you, right? So, I'm gonna ask you a series of questions real quick. Have you ever had a ketchup sandwich?
No.
Have you ever had a sugar and butter sandwich?
No.
No. Have you ever had sugar water?
Yeah.
You've had sugar water. Okay, give me some context.
My grandma gave it to me.
Oh, your grandma, black. She black. So, she just gave you a cup with some sugar and water and then said, here, drink this shit. I need some more context.
She was watching my brother and I while my parents went away on a couple's vacation.
Where's your grandma from?
Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay. Explains a lot. Okay.
Okay.
Jacksonville got some niggas.
So yeah, that was, you know, we didn't have any more juice. So that's what happened.
Sugar water. Did you enjoy it?
I guess. I don't remember.
Man. Okay, and also growing up, were you aware of the prices of things? Anything? Like, let's just say groceries, food, snacks, candy, things of that nature. Did you know what the prices of these things are, aware how much they cost?
No. Not as a kid, no.
No? But you did have them?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, next question. Did you ever wonder where a meal was coming from or when the next time you were going to eat?
I didn't have that insecurity, no.
You didn't have food insecurity. Okay, but you did have financial security as well, right?
If I did, I didn't know I should have it.
That's a good point. That's a good point because I'd say our backgrounds vary greatly.
Yes.
So... yeah, I didn't have any security for anything. When did you realize that you were different? Because you didn't grow up around very many black people, correct?
Correct. I'm just going to say that.
But, I mean, if you want to expound.
I mean, outside of church, like I went to a black Baptist church when I was young. And then outside of family. That was it.
Okay. So your neighborhoods, they were, for all intents and purposes, white neighborhoods.
Either white or we just didn't have that many neighbors. I mean, my first home was essentially on a mountain. And there was a lot of distance between neighbors. So we really didn't interact with them too much.
Okay. And let's say your teenage years.
My teenage years were different. That was when I went to, or when I realized that, you know, I'm kind of the only one that looks like me in this situation. So
your teenage years, you realized that you were different from your peers just based on your skin color solely?
I would say probably preteen to teen, yeah.
Preteen to teen. Based on your appearance, your skin color, or were there other experiences that also added to that?
Just on my skin color.
Okay, so your high school was, what was the racial makeup of it? Let's say junior high and high.
I would say like 70% white, 20% black, and... the rest were Latino.
Okay. Now, your experience with, let's say, the 20% black, were y'all real close?
No.
No. Tell me how some of the interactions went or why you weren't close. Let's start there. Why do you think you weren't close?
I don't think I was close because we didn't share a lot of the same classes. I mean, it's just the lack of environment. I mean, we had a my high school graduating class was, I think, about 530 people. So the majority of them were white. So just how the classes were divvied up, I didn't get placed in classes where all the black people were.
Were they all in specific classes that you weren't in?
I didn't see them.
You didn't see them. Okay. So now here's the flip side of that. When did you realize that you were different amongst black people?
Pretty young. I would say elementary school, maybe 5 or 6.
So we already established that you were different amongst the white people you grew up with and around because you weren't white.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're also different from the black people that you 5 or 6 years old. So how were you different there?
I remember an experience I had when I visited my cousins. And they were in D.C.
D.C. Shout out to D.C., the whole DMV.
And my cousins were about my brother's age, about roughly about the same age difference. And my cousin made a comment. Why are you talking prissy?
Prissy. Okay.
And I'm like, I didn't. I'm just talking. He's like, well, stop sounding prissy.
Okay.
And we kind of got back and, went back and forth about it. And she kind of bullied me a little bit.
I can see that happening in D.C. Like, look at this nigga coming down here talking all proper and shit. Man, if you don't take that shit back to where the fuck you came from. Oh, Gilligan's Island sounding ass Marianne Ginger. Yeah. That's D.C. for you, though.
Okay.
It don't matter. You could have talked straight up hood and they would have found something else. Like, nigga, look at your shoes. Fuck you get them shoes from Kmart? Like, yeah. So you realized that you were different around black people. You realized you were different around white people. Where do you think you fit in the best?
I really don't think I fit in either. I don't feel like I do.
Okay. Where are you more comfortable?
I would say, I feel a little more comfortable. Not much, but a little more comfortable amongst a majority white environment. And the reason being is because I don't feel like I can relate to black folks, basically.
You know this is being recorded, right?
I know. But, like, I get kind of nervous because I'm not, like, a lot of things, I don't know exactly what the subject of conversation might be. 'Cause I don't know the slang, maybe, that they're talking or using.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're trying to, if they, you know, make a, I don't know what to say, a cliche or whatever. They're not talking about me because I don't know exactly what that, you know, something means. So that's why I think I feel a little more comfortable.
Like, let's say you're around a group of white people who don't like you because you're black. You still prefer that over being around black people that you don't understand?
I can't. I don't think I would feel comfortable knowing that they don't like me. No.
I'd be more, I guess, I'd want to be around people who openly dislike me than people who
hide it.
Yeah, they're either, you know, covert with their dislike towards me, or, as you said, I don't understand. Like, if you put me in a place, let's say an Asian country or something, where I don't speak the language, I don't know the body language, I don't know shit. Yeah, I'm gonna be uncomfortable with that because it's like, yeah, I don't know what the fuck they say. I don't know what the fuck, you know, and body language and different things can be offensive in certain cultures. So, yeah, I'd rather be around a whole bunch of rednecks that fucking hate me than to be around in an Asian speaking country where I just, you know, don't know shit.
Yeah.
So I guess, draw a parallel there with that. So it's more or less do you feel like you lack the black experience?
Yes.
What areas do you think that you lack in as far as the Black experience?
It's probably more so on the level of, like, we started the show, financial and, you know, that security issue. I mean, you asking me about a ketchup sandwich?
Yeah, a ketchup sandwich.
I can't relate. If you've had a ketchup sandwich, I can't relate to you, you know, on that particular subject.
I'm going to make you one, but okay, after we're done here, because I think every Black person needs to experience a ketchup sandwich at least once in their life. Mm. So have you, in your childhood or teenage years, have you ever been in any situations where it's like, yo, I can die, or I am in danger right now. Something very bad can happen to me.
In what context? Like,
period. Like, that's the first thought that came to your head is that I am in danger right now.
I can't recall an experience like that.
None whatsoever. Mm. Cool. I can say that I eat ketchup sandwiches. Sugar and butter sandwiches, man. You put that shit on toast, though. Sugar and butter on toast. Woo! Because we were too poor to afford food. What are some other things? Shit. You ever stole anything from the corner store?
No, not from the corner store.
You ever been to a corner store?
Yes, I've been to a corner store.
As a child?
Yes.
Okay. Just checking.
Okay.
So, yeah, we used to go steal fucking candy and shit because, you know, like I asked you at the top of the show, is do you know how much, or were you aware of how much certain things cost? We had the generic brand everything, whatever my mother could afford. So if you seen me with some name brand shit as a child, yeah, I probably stole that shit or probably got somebody to steal it from the corner store, well, or whatever.
I mean, as far as brand stuff, like, I didn't pay attention to that. I didn't know anything about that. Mainly because most of my elementary, you know, one, I didn't have cable. My parents, we didn't have cable. And so learning about what's current in the world was not in the forefront of my mind. So if the milk had, you know, If the cheese said Kraft, I wouldn't know. It's just cheese, you know.
Okay. Now, kind of jumping around here, but so the white people that you grew up with and around, did they treat you any differently looking back? Or even at the time, could you recognize them treating you differently?
No.
So at the time you couldn't, but looking back, do you think they did?
Nothing is coming to the top, you know, jumping out at me. So no.
Okay. So anyway, like I said, grew up poor, food insecurity, financial insecurity, moving from place to place. And the one thing that I will say, though, is everyone in my neighborhood was poor. So at the time growing up, yo, we thought everybody was poor because, mm-hmm. I mean, as a child, now I'm talking, you know, young child, maybe even preteen, you don't really know much beyond your neighborhood. So if everybody in my neighborhood is poor, it is safe for me to assume that everybody is poor, you mm-hmm. know? And then I want to say in, you know, the 12, 13, 14 year old range, that's when I started to realize people that were, you know, grew up differently and had different experiences, especially once I got locked up in the detention center, I interacted with even more kids from all over the area because the detention center housed like kids from DC, Maryland, Virginia, just like all over the place. So you start to realize that, okay, not everybody lived the way that I lived. There were people that were worse off than me that I met even in my own neighborhood. But at the time you don't look at them as, yo, they're worse off.
Right.
You just look at them as, you know, that's just somebody else in the neighborhood. Yeah, they might not dress as nice or they might not be as fly. And that's something that I did learn growing up in a all Black neighborhood is, yo, we can take kind of like the whole Chitlin thing where, you know, we'll take the shittiest shit and make it fly.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say Chitlins, I just mean, you know, the part of the pig that nobody wants.
Right.
So yo, we're going to take this shit. We're going to whip it up, throw some hot sauce, some vinegar. We're going to make this shit taste good. Chitlins do not taste good, ladies and gentlemen. But even with our style, none of our parents had money to buy us name brand clothes, but we took, you know, the cheap ass, like I said, Kmart clothes or, you know, wherever we got our clothes from. And we made this shit fly. Black people will take some shit that nobody else wants and make this shit fly as fuck.
And then everybody wants it and wants to
right
take it.
And then white put people on catch it. On and then they start to make the shit uncool. But so, you know, I just assumed that everybody was poor. Nobody had money. Nobody had name brand shit. And then the older I got, you know, I started to realize, oh, shit, no, not everybody lives like this. And, you know, there was, I guess it was a, not a rude awakening, but that did spark some jealousy within me. Because it's like, yo, all this time, I thought everybody was poor. And now I'm starting to see, you know, people with big houses and driveways and this, that, and the other. So, and I can say that there were numerous times where I was in life or death situations, and not that I put myself in these situations, but again, it's environmental. Mm-hmm. So I guess one of the differences between you and I, as far as growing up, is you grew up in what are called, according to the article that I read, an ordered community, basically a community that is in order. Mm. My neighborhoods, all of them were very disorderly. So, you know, there's plenty of times where I've placed myself in danger. No, I did not place myself in danger. I was placed in danger just because of my environment and, you know, where I was. Whether it be someone trying to jack you for your shoes, some kids trying to jump you or whatever. These are things. And plus, the way our neighborhoods were set up is there were black neighborhood and then a neighboring black neighborhood and then a neighboring black neighborhood. And these were all poor slash working poor. So if we wanted to go to one of our friends' houses in a neighboring neighborhood, yeah, we had to worry about getting jumped, getting, you know, whatever, because it, for some reason, it was just like a real territorial thing. Mm-hmm. So, again, plenty of times where it's like, yo, life or death, we can die, you know?
Yeah.
And your experience, you don't have that. So no life or death, you know, whatever. And me and Paul, we talk about that a lot on A Few Screws Loose, is just some of the stupid shit we've done. I mean, we've done shit to where it's like, yeah, we can die. And this is our fault.
But you're going to do it anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, 8, 9 years old, even earlier than that, probably 6 or 7, I was able to identify a crackhead. Were you able to identify crackheads? So no. Your parents could have been crackheads for all you know, and you wouldn't have known.
Nope.
So, yeah, that's, you know, the different environment. So I grew up around black people. I am comfortable around black people. Do I understand, like, going, you know, to what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I moved to New Orleans, I did not understand a word these motherfuckers down here were saying. It sounded like gibberish. It sounded like that Asian country I was just
like
talking about.
They were
about.
Talking a different language.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, and, you know, that speaks to the Ebonics and slang and stuff like that. I didn't know what the fuck, but I was able to catch on because I don't know. I can't really explain how I caught on, but I was able to catch on. Fairly quick, you know, be a quick study.
Mm.
And even with the slang down here, I don't care for it particularly, but I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So being here in New Orleans, do you like, how do you feel about the slang? Like when you're talking about slang, what, give me an example or maybe of some time when somebody was talking and you didn't necessarily understand what they were talking about.
The example that comes to to the top of my head is when I moved down to New Orleans, you know, ordering a sandwich or a burger or whatever, they said, how do you want it dressed? I had no clue what dressed meant.
And what was your response in that moment?
I said, no, because I didn't know what it was.
How do you want it dressed? No. So you didn't ask?
Eventually I did. Like, what do you mean? Like toppings or, you know?
Right.
They're like, yeah. Oh, okay.
Okay. That was a bad example.
I mean, that's what I can think of.
Yeah. It is hard to pick up. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I picked up over the years down here, but I think, like, I don't know. This is going to sound weird because I have nothing to back it up, but I think being black is universal almost, no matter where you go. And sure, people talk different, people say different things. And I think one of the things you might have been alluding to is the shade. Like, you might not pick up on the shade.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's shading you, or are they like, you know how people are like, God bless your heart, baby. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, this person just blessed me. No, they just called you retarded, mm-hmm. you know. So when you say you, is that the type of stuff you mean?
Yeah, that's the type of stuff. Like, you know, or even just like the regional stuff, I guess you could say. Like, you were the one that told me about Bama.
Don't ever say that word out loud.
And I still can't say it. I still can't say it. But, you know, I had no clue what you were, you know.
So, like, in listening to me and somebody talk, like me and one of my cousins talk, or even me and Paul talk, right? And you hear the word being used. Okay, so let's say you didn't know what Bama was or what Bama meant, right? But you keep hearing it over and over to where mm-hmm. it's like, man, them Bamas down there tripping, man. Look at this Bama ass nigga right here. Hey, man, ask that Bama to go to the store for me right quick and grab me something to eat. Man, that's some Bama shit dude just did right there. So would you be able to surmise, I guess, from the constant usage of it? So you don't know what it means, but you're hearing it in sentences over and over again that, okay, I could kind of put my finger on what this means.
So using that particular example that you just gave, I would assume or ascertain that that's probably something you don't want to be. You don't want to be classified as that. You don't want to be called that. That's not a good thing for you to be. So then the next thought I have is, if it's bad, am I that? How do you get to be called that? Why, you know?
You know, these Bamas just called me a Bama, man.
So yeah, that made me insecure.
Because you don't know exactly. Nobody can explain Bama. Like, you got to be from the D.C. area to, like, it's a word that it's a noun, person, place, or thing. Doesn't necessarily mean, you know, something you don't want to be called. Like, I call Paul a Bama all the time. Bama ass nigga, man. So, yeah, that whole thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Bamas, man. I forgot what the hell I was saying before that. So it doesn't bother you that people don't necessarily think that you talk black, speak black, act black, or even are black until they meet you. Doesn't bother you?
No, but the thing that does bother me is I don't, and this happens more so with black people, is I feel excluded or isolated. Like, one, because I may not speak it, I would hope that because I'm one of you, you might be able to, you know, let me in the group too.
I was one of y'all. Can I play?
Yeah. That it just makes me uncomfortable to think that they're going to use something that I can't change. In addition, you know, other people might just look at me and use my skin as a reason to exclude me. But this is something that, you know.
Yeah, but it would also depend on the person, because people are, so we do have what's called black culture, and we all have this, it's almost like a stereotype, the black experience and mm-hmm. what have you. But people are individuals. People are different.
Right.
Like, and she's a ghetto ass black lawyer. Like, you know, when you think lawyer, you think, my name is Morris Bart, and I'm here to get you out of, you know. So each person is different. So I don't necessarily think that every black group would exclude you or not include you. I just think it depends on the type of people that are in this group, because, mm-hmm. you know, like people like to say black people aren't monolithic. So, no, every single group of black people are not going to act the exact same. But we all do share some common ground somewhere. And, you know, mine is ketchup sandwiches and sugar water and, you know, what have you. But so how do you deal with stress? Like, let's go through the years as a young juvenile or whatever. Did you know what stress was?
No.
Okay. At what point do you think you discovered what stress is? Like, oh, shit, I'm stressed, or this is stressful.
It's probably academics related. Like, you know, I have a deadline and I haven't started on the project at all, and it's the night before it's due.
See, that's some nigga shit right there. Dude, I do this fucking 2-week project on the bus on the way to school in the morning. Fuck them.
Yeah, so
they gonna give me an A just because I'm black, because if not, I'm gonna be like, what, you a racist? You a racist? Why can't I get an A like the rest of the white kids? So academic related.
Yeah, academics related was when I...
How'd you react to it?
Initially, I probably like freaked out when I wasn't confident in my overnight project or whatever. But I just prepared the best I could, and then whatever happened.
As an adult, how do you deal with stress as an adult? Let's go to college age to now.
In college, academic stress was not...
Don't nobody give a fuck Mm-mm. about academics in college.
That's what I'm about. I mean, it wasn't the priority.
Aunt Becky paying $500,000 just to get her damn daughter into USC.
Oh, yeah.
Think she gave a fuck about an academic?
No, she... That happened for class and society and stuff. Reputation.
Right. So your real first encounter was something stressful that was not academic related. How did you respond? What's your, again, trying to find out your stress response?
In college, I had a stressful situation because I didn't know where I was going to live for a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Because my roommate and I had fallen out. And
man, that is not the blackest thing you can say. We had a falling out.
We got an argument.
Let me translate for you. Yeah. Me and this bitch I was staying with got the beefing. Okay. There you go.
Okay.
For the rest of it, I'm going to just translate for you. Go ahead.
Thank you. So, I didn't know where I was going to stay, because I was not going to stay in the room with her.
Man. This bitch had me fucked up if she thought that I was about to stay up in that hole with her. Shit. Either she was going to get the fuck or I was going to get the fuck. One or the other. It ain't even matter to me. And I ain't had nowhere to go either. But you know what? I'm like, psh, I'm out this bitch.
Yes.
Continue.
So I slept on another student's floor in their dorm room.
Let me translate this. I slept on my homie's floor.
There you go.
That sounds a little bit better.
And I would ask my homies.
Mm-hmm. Don't do that. Let me do the translating. Don't do that.
So I would ask the other students, you know, hey, is my roommate in my old dorm room, or is she there? Is it a good time for me to go in and get clothes and books and things that I need? And
wait, so you were avoiding her?
Yes.
Okay. And why were you avoiding her and she not avoiding you?
Because I didn't want to deal with her. I didn't want to, because every time that I went in the room, there would be an altercation. So I didn't want to be in an environment where I had to argue. So I chose to avoid it.
So I was just being non-confrontational and trying to avoid the argument, is what you're saying. But let me translate this for you, okay?
Okay.
Man, because look, see, like this, right? It was either she was going to be up in there and I was going to choke the bitch, or, I'm sorry, I can't translate that because I can't relate. I cannot relate. And that's actually a perfect segue, though, is, you know, there's a lot of different ways you could have handled it. And I would tell you what the black way to handle it is. And of course, when I say black, ladies and gentlemen,
I am not necessarily.
I am being, as Anne would say, facetious, but I can walk into a room with somebody who hates me and I hate this person. And we have zero interactions because one, I don't have to speak to you. You don't have to speak to me. We don't even have to exchange looks for real. I mean, especially if we're sharing a living, you know, living quarters or whatever. It's like, OK, I'm not going to be pushed out of my living quarters because we have some kind of tension between us. We just going to be sitting up in that bitch looking stupid, not talking to each other. Or again, you did mention fight. If you want to fight, let's do it. That at that age, that would have probably been my go to. But look. The blackest way to handle that shit is, psh, yo, this bitch got me fucked up. She gonna make me sleep on somebody's floor. Wait, she got me sleeping on somebody. Nah, I'm gonna go in here. I'm gonna drag this bitch through the whole fucking dorm. I don't care how big the dorm is. I'll walk in circles dragging this bitch for a quarter mile. Dorm only 4x4. Shit, that's a lot of fucking dragging in a circle. But no, you don't have to. You just don't have to. And then if somebody is argumentative towards you or hostile towards you, even verbally, for me, I'm able to ignore it. Mm-hmm. Because I grew, again, you know, going back to childhood, I grew up with people cussing me out, my parents cussing me out, my mother cussing me out, even my friends, or you know, who I thought were my friends in the neighborhood, cussing me out. And you know, we always would end up beefing with other kids in the neighborhood, fighting, and then we're friends 5 minutes later. So it's like growing up, there's so much tension. Again, in my experience, there was just so much tension that it doesn't necessarily bother me. No, I don't like it. And I'm very non-confrontational. However, I'm not going to let you basically bully me out of mm-hmm. what is rightfully mine. So like if this roommate or whatever, if that's their place and I'm crashing there, that's different. You know, yeah, nah, I'm not going up in there. Fine, whatever, whatever. Hey, yo, but I am going to come get my shit. Hey, you don't want me up in there? Bring my shit out. One or the mm-hmm. other. But if I'm rightfully supposed to be there, we're just going to have a problem and we both going to be up in this motherfucker because, you know, like, but okay. So you were crashing with other people instead. And how, so going back again to the stress response, avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how did that issue get resolved?
The semester ended and she transferred schools.
Well, that'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
So any further, like later on in life, stressful moments, were they all, I guess, approached the same way as far as avoidance?
No.
Okay.
No. Some, you know, you just couldn't avoid. Some you just had to realize that there is nothing that you can do in that situation. And, you know, there's no need to stress because it's, you know, you can't do anything at that particular moment to change the situation. Yeah.
Okay. So you've seen my stress response.
Yes.
I go 0 to 100.
Yes.
It's like there's no in between. There's no. Oh, it's out of my hands. Can't, you know, there's no. Nothing I can do.
No, nah. you don't have that setting.
Yeah, I really and truly don't. It's either I'm coasting and everything is smooth. I get stressed really easily. And again, I want to say, especially after reading this article, which I'm going to just read a paragraph of as we wrap this up. But going back to childhood. Experiencing stress as a child, financial stress. A child should not have mm-hmm. to experience that shit, man. Food, you know, just wondering if I'm gonna eat dinner tonight, wondering if, you know, we're gonna catch two buses to go to my grandma's house just to get a meal. Then, you know, just a constant level of poverty, drug use, drug dealers, and then we didn't really have gangs in D.C. It was more or less cliques, crews, neighborhoods.
Territorial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Having to maneuver through that as well. So like my whole childhood was stress. And then being locked up, that was fucking stressful. And even while being in there, that you just stress, trauma, stress, trauma, trauma. That's my whole life. So there is no middle of the road for me. Like, oh, can't control everything. You know, there's nothing I can do in this situation. It's out of my hands. So why stress? Hell no. I stress about everything, 0 to 100. And I think it's just because I've lived a very stressful life. So my stress response is from 0 to 100, whereas yours is more like 0 to wherever we land. You know, it might be 10, it might be 20, it might be 30. But yeah, so yeah. But you witness me when I get stressed. It's 0 to 100. And then there's no talking to me either. Mm-mm. You can't talk me out of shit. You can't tell me I'm being unreasonable. And what's crazy is a lot of the times I know I'm being unreasonable, but there's nothing I can do about it.
Yep.
Motherfuckers be like, breathe. Just, you know, breathe. Man, shut the fuck up. I'm alive, so I'm breathing. So get the fuck out my face. Let me stress over here. Shit. Like, fuck wrong with you trying to calm me down. Don't try to calm me down. Oh, you think you could calm me down? Like, it's...
And this, for me, witnessing him go through this, that's where I found this setting of there is nothing that you can do to fix this at this moment.
Yeah. And that's the truth. And it blows over. Mm-hmm. It's like a storm, especially like stress and anger go hand in hand, because with me, I do have anger issues and I do have issues with stress. And I think anger, of course, this is all some traumatic shit that probably needs to be unpacked in many years worth of therapy. But it's like anger is my default. So when anything changes, I get angry. If I get stressed, I get angry. If I get uncomfortable, I get angry. If, you know, I deal with anxiety. So if I have panic attacks or whatever, I get angry. Mm-hmm. Anger. It all results in anger. So it's like, when I get super stressed, I'm super fucking angry. I'm hostile. And people, even people who've known me for a long time, who have never seen me actually be stressed out or be anxious or any of these things, when they finally see it with their own eyes, they're like, you're a totally different person. That is not the person I know. Mm-hmm. Because to most people, I'm laid back, calm, ha ha ha, nonchalant, just, you know, whatever. Nothing bothers me, which is like the furthest from the truth. But that's also it's kind of like a defense mechanism that I've developed growing up, is nothing bothers me. It's all whatever, you know, mm-hmm. It's whatever. Like Bruh Man from the fifth floor would say, you know who Bruh Man from the fifth floor is?
Is that Martin?
Good enough.
Okay.
It's like, you know, people could, you know, oh, so-and-so said this. So-and-so said this, or this happened, that happened, all this stuff happened. It's whatever. But on the inside, I'm like, okay, wait till I see this motherfucker, you know? So, but I do come off as very nonchalant, non-caring, very relaxed, laid back. And in a sense, I guess, because that's what I project, that's what I am. But when I get stressed out or angry, should I say, well, you know, hand in hand, and someone who I've known sees it for the first time, they're like, this motherfucker is crazy. No, he's legit crazy. He ain't ha ha ha. He great. No, this motherfucker's crazy. But there's nothing, you know, during that time anybody can do. Is like, you know, even going back to being young or whatever. Like, say, you know, I just said, you know, when I see this motherfucker, I'm a beat his ass or whatever. So you have the person that's trying to talk you out of it. Like, nah, man, it ain't even that serious. It ain't that serious. Just let it go. You know, don't even worry about it. Nah. Because, you know, then he going to think I'm a sucker, whatever. It's blah, 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 blah. All the huffing and puffing. And then you got the one person that's trying to hold you back when you finally see the person. You know, like, hey, somebody grab him. Somebody hold him. Somebody hold him. There is no holding me back. Mm-hmm. There is no talking me out of it. It's like, it is what it is. And I have a lot of unreasonable reactions. And again, that goes back to childhood and probably mental health issues that, you know, I was trying to figure what came first, the chicken or the egg. If the mental health issues, because it is kind of genetic, came first, or if the environmental stress and trauma created the mental health issues, or maybe it just made them present differently, or, you know, whatever. So, yeah, my stress levels are through the roof, 0 to 100, but you can kind of let things go and, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Right. So, anyway, anything else you want to add? I mean, I just thought it, again, listening back to last week's episode where I said, yeah, you know, because Becky don't sound black. I figured, you know, let's have a conversation about you not sounding black, or you not having what would be considered the typical black experience. Do you know how to play spades?
I was taught a couple times, but I think if I see it again, I can do it.
Do not go to a spades table with that attitude. It's either I know how to play spades or I don't, because that will get you fucked up by your partner. Like, not the other team. That'll get you fucked up at a spades table.
Yeah.
So anything else you want to add?
Well, I mean, you know, brought up this, you decided to bring up this topic. And I'm just wondering, do you have an opinion about how I talk?
No, because it's very, let me translate this in a way you would understand. Mm-hmm. No, because it can be very beneficial.
So the way that I talk is an asset to you.
It could be an asset for us.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very beneficial, because if I need some. So for growing up in, again, poverty and an all black neighborhood, I think I speak well. But again, we have that 0 to 100 mentality, mm-hmm. my irritability and anger or whatever. So if I need something official, or we need something official handled, like, say, for instance, calling an insurance company to fight with them about a bill. Me, I can start off, you know, hey, look, I see these charges and I don't think they're right. Maybe these things were coded wrong. And the reason I'm saying this is we have a future episode about medical billing and medical debt. But I just think something's not right here. Could you help me out and get this squared away? Then it's going to be, okay, hold, please. Okay, can you do that again? And then it's going to get dragged out. And after about 10 minutes, I'm like, look, motherfucker, I ain't paying this shit. All right, God damn it. Now take this shit and shove it up your motherfucker. See, I don't have the patience. But whenever you handle some official shit, because of the timbre and tone of your voice, and because of how you sound, you'd be taken more seriously. And it's unfortunate that that's the world we live in, to be honest, that people who speak a certain way, because up north, years ago, at least, you would hear someone from the south with a southern drawl, say Georgia, Texas, Florida, and
Tennessee.
You would automatically think that they're dumb. And this is not a shot to, you know, anybody, because I have lots of friends in the south now. But growing up, I didn't. Again, all I knew was my neighborhood. So somebody moved into the neighborhood from down south and they had that slow country draw, or, you know, they, like, you just equate that, especially the further up north you get, like you go to New York. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, I think that's where the term Bama came from, is people from the south moving up north. And, you know, but it's like you're automatically perceived as dumb. No, people in the South are not dumb. They just talk differently. Mm-hmm. They have a different draw. I mean, you go anywhere, the Midwest, Pennsylvania, even. When I lived in Pennsylvania for that short time, there's I can't put my finger on it, but there's a cadence. There's something, a cadence, something mm-hmm. It didn't sit well with me. It didn't sit well with my spirits, as black folk would say. It didn't sit well with my spirits. But, you know, people just talk different. But again, it's like conditioning, and we thought people from the South were dumb. So that's the unfortunate reality that we live in. So the more proper you sound, the more seriously you're taken. I'm pretty sure that you've even had job interviews, like phone interviews, where you're taken serious, you're the best candidate. And then next thing you know, you show up and they're like, yo, whoa, you the person who's talking to you? So,
yeah. But I guess my last question for you is, when you first met me, what was your perception of me as it related to how I talk?
So check this out. Let's go back to the top of the show where I said, why weren't you close to the other black people in your school? And your response was, because we didn't have the same classes. We didn't, you know, we just didn't cross paths or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved up to where you lived briefly, and it was very brief. But I'm the opposite. I find black people, like, because it was a white area.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very white area. I'm not looking for white people. I'm looking for people that look like me. And, you know, that's, I guess, how we became friends or whatever is, yo, look at another nigga. Let me, you know, another somebody that looks like me. Okay, yeah, this one does talk a little different, though. Maybe it's broken.
Oh,
man, they
is that
they,
where
they
that
broke
came
another
from?
Black person up here. Let me see if I can fix this one up here. But no, like when I'm in a white environment, or when I'm in an environment where I'm outnumbered by another ethnicity, I start going to look for people who look like me. Whether it be, it could be any other minority. It could be an Asian group. It could be a Hispanic. Doesn't matter. I just go look for other minorities. But to be very specific, I look for other black people. So that's why it's kind of hard for me to wrap my head around, if you're in a majority white school, not being cool with, you know, all the other black kids, because that I would have, you know, found all the other black kids to hang out with, because I think that's just, it's in my nature. Just for instance, I could be out in public, and I'm sure you've seen this a few times, us out in public, walk by a random black dude. What's up, man? That's it. Head nod. What's up? Yeah. Have you seen that, right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't do that to white people. Hey, put her there, pal. Like, nah, motherfucker. But it is a way of saying, I see you, I acknowledge you, and, you know, we'll keep it moving. I don't know you, but, you know, it's an acknowledgement thing. So that happens quite often, you know, to me too. I'd just be standing there, and someone, just the other day at Smoothie King, dude came up to me. Yo, what's up, man? My bad. I left my wallet in the car. I don't mean to hold up the line. Take your time. You know, so it's, and there was like three or four white people in front of me that mm-hmm. were directly behind him, but he didn't talk to them. He talked, you know, spoke to me. So it's like, I find it's hard for me to wrap my head around that. But again, different, you know, different upbringings, different. I'm comfortable around black people. So, you know, it's just like, that's, I would say that my first impression of you is, she's black. I don't see too many of these up here.
Okay.
Like, shit, we had jokes up there that, you know, we would see. I don't know what the fuck. Y'all got crop circles or some shit. Ladies and gentlemen, Becky grew up on a farm.
So I did not grow up on a farm.
Y'all got crop circles. Like, we driving down the road and see some shit burning on the side in a big ass field. Shit burning. It's like, yep. That's where all the niggas at.
Mm-hmm.
Remind me to stay the fuck from around that field. So anyway, yeah, that's, I guess today's topic, just, you know.
Well, I guess, so that was the only thing that you thought, oh, not another black, there's a black person, not, oh, I don't want to be around this black person, or she really isn't black, or,
no,
you know.
No, because even at, I was an early adult, let's say, at that time. I mean, probably 18, 19, something mm-hmm. like that. I don't know. But I had experienced enough to know that not every single black person is going to be the same. Not every single black person is going to be from the hood or from poverty, as I once thought when I was a child, that we're all from poverty. And so... yeah, no, it was just more like black person, immediate connection, you know, black person, immediate connection. That's it's just like the go to. That's black is, I guess, my default. And I'm sure you've seen me. I'm trying to think, but, you know, we're kind of crunched for time here. Have you ever seen me in a room full of white people?
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
OK.
The doctor's office. Come on. In the waiting room.
Okay, that's not really what I was going for. So, Yeah, that's not what I was going for. I meant more of a social. Anyway, I'm gonna wrap up just reading this article here. It's called Toxic Stress and Children's Outcomes. African American children growing up poor are at greater risk of disrupted physiological functioning and depressed academic achievement. So, the executive summary. Stress is a commonplace term for hormonal changes that occur in response to frightening or threatening events or conditions. When severe, these changes are termed toxic stress and can impede children's behavior, cognitive capacity, and emotional and physical health. Frightening or threatening situations are more sustained and experienced more frequently by African-American and socially economically disadvantaged children who also have less access to protective resources that could mitigate their stress to tolerable levels. This report describes the relative frequency of toxic stress by race and social class and shows how it depresses children's outcomes and contributes to the achievement gap, air quotes. Key findings: social class and childhood stress. Beginning in infancy, lower social class children are more likely to have strong, frequent, or prolonged exposure to major traumatic events, the frightening or threatening conditions that induce a stress response. Income and childhood stress. The lowest income children are more likely to be exposed to frightening or threatening experience than other children. Race and childhood stress. Black children are more likely than white children to be exposed to frightening and or threatening experiences. Childhood stress and depressed outcomes. Independent of other characteristics, children exposed to more frightening and threatening events are more likely to suffer from academic problems, behavioral problems, and health problems. These attributes present challenges to children's school and life trajectories. So that's why I was asking you about stress response. Anyway, I'll post that link to that that study. It's an older study, but still, I found it's still relevant. And, you know, that's what had me thinking. I'm like, okay, a lot of this applies to me. And very little of it applies to Becky. So that's why I was kind of like, yeah, let's sit down and have a conversation about your upbringing, my upbringing, and the fact that, you know, I grew up around black people. You didn't necessarily grow up around black people, and maybe how that, well, I grew up in poverty. You didn't grow up in poverty. How that affected us as adults. So, I mean, take away from this episode what you will. It's not our best foot forward coming back here without our attorney.
No, I mean, the name of the show has legal in it. And yeah, it's like, come on.
We're going to have to change the name of this show to Black Lies. And that means I got to kick you the fuck off the show, too. I mean, it's just going to be me.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of Black Law and Legal Lies. Hopefully next time we will have Anne back on the show. Keep up with us all social media at Black Law Podcast. And of course, you can keep up with me on all social media at I Am Dan on Drugs.
And I am Afro Becky. You can't follow me because I don't want to be followed or stalked. But thank you for listening tonight.
Peace.